Different to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Kelly Davio. The introduction of biosimilars into the U.S. marketplace has been cause for both excitement and concern, as these products hold the potential to drive down costs and increase patient access, but face significant challenges to uptake. One of those challenges is interchangeability. Federal law provides for interchangeable biosimilars, but the FDA has not yet granted that status to any biosimilar product, and it hasn't finalized its guidance on demonstrating interchangeability with a reference product. In this episode of Not So Different, you'll hear expert viewpoints on the issue of interchangeability from stakeholders across the biosimilars landscape. You'll hear the manufacturer's perspective from Molly Burrich, the Associate Director of Public Policy, Biosimilars Pipeline Reimbursement at Boehringer Ingelheim. You'll also hear legal perspective from Ha-Kung Wong, a partner at Fitzpatrick, Chella, Harper, and Zinto. And you'll hear the provider's point of view from Dr. Angus Worthing, a practicing rheumatologist and chair of the American College of Rheumatology's Government Affairs Committee. Moderating the discussion is Amanda Forres, Senior Director of Reimbursement Policy Insights at Xcenda. The discussion that follows was recorded in late 2017 as part of our peer exchange program.
First, we're going to talk about biosimilar regulation in the United States and Europe. The FDA is currently reviewing industry feedback on its interchangeability draft guidance. Molly, will biosimilar manufacturers seeking interchangeability have an effect on how reference product sponsors attempt to protect market share?
It's a great question. I think it will. I think, the purpose of interchangeability from an FDA standpoint is really geared towards proving that switching products for any given patient will result in the same clinical outcome as the originator. Therefore, we believe that the designation of interchangeability will be meaningful. It will be meaningful from a patient standpoint. Hopefully, it builds their confidence in the product they're taking. And we really believe it'll be meaningful from a physician standpoint, as the data will be built and designed exactly for switching. So we think it will impact behavior across the industry for those designations when they're given.
Yeah, I'd like to also mention something about, reference product sponsors. I think that to a certain extent, they're really going to move to protect their products even more strongly because of the fact that interchangeables act like the traditional small molecule generic, where they can kind of piggyback on the marketing and education of the branded drug. And so they're going to look for ways to actually find other ways to protect it, get additional IP, and I can see a lot more challenges from interchangeable manufacturers as well on IP that is owned by RPS. In particular, of the interchangeable guidance, they actually talk about how product presentation, for instance, including labeling, packaging, and delivery device design is actually really important and has to be looked at. And because of that, I can see reference product sponsors looking to get IP around those aspects to kind of protect their market share as well.
Yeah, and it's a great point. I think that the interchangeability guidance was probably the most long-awaited guidance that the FDA released as it pertains to biosimilars. There were industry, physicians, every stakeholder was really interested to see what the FDA was going to require. And I think the reality is it's a high bar, and appropriately so, for what it's trying to prove.
Dr. Worthing, so we don't have an interchangeable biosimilar on the market yet, but how would the designation of interchangeability affect you as a provider in your clinical prescribing practices?
Great question. Molly's right. Doctors and patients have been waiting, I think, for the interchangeability guidance. I think it would help confidence from, as a rheumatologist and somebody who writes prescriptions for biologics. There's two general situations in which a doctor might write a prescription for a biologic. That's for a patient who hasn't taken the drug yet, and they're new to the drug. And then there's the situation where we're writing a prescription for somebody who's already been on the reference product, say, for some time and might have been doing well, and we're writing a prescription for the biosimilar for them to change over and move. I think in the first instance, we're getting a really good amount of confidence in the FDA pathway, which shows that the structure and function and anticipated usefulness, safety, and efficacy of biosimilars are biosimilar to their reference products. And to me, that kind of matches up with the first clinical situation where I'm prescribing a biosimilar to a patient who's not taking a drug yet. where the interchangeability pathway comes in, I think, in boosting confidence is in that second situation where a patient might be doing well on a drug, and both the doctor and the patient are interested in knowing if a biosimilar, which might be cheaper or they might have easier access to it, if that's going to work the same way, not cause any more side effects, still keep their disease under control. And that's where I think the pathway that the FDA has drafted, which we saw this winter, really helps boost confidence. The pathway suggests clinical trial design where manufacturers start patients all on the biologic reference product and then switch three times to the biosimilar, back to the reference product, and then back to the biosimilar, and confirm that they're just as safe and effective. I think that that'll help in that situation where we can be confident telling the patient this drug that might seem new to you, but it's going to work just as well as the drug you've been taking.
So that actually ties a little bit into a follow-up question I was thinking of. So as you're currently comfortable with the pathway, you're currently comfortable with a patient, as you're saying, kind of a new patient, a new start with the FDA guidance. So this is really just that switch patient, your continuing patient thinking about switching the therapy. But what evidence are you currently relying on in looking at products that have been approved to make sure that you're comfortable prescribing them?
Right now, we're looking at two different kinds of evidence mainly. One is looking, it's called analytical data. That's data in the test tube and data about the molecule and how it works, that the mechanism of action works the same way as the reference product. And then the second kind of data is clinical trial data. So that includes putting the drug into people who have the disease that the drug is applying for indication, and making sure that it works just as well and has as few safety signals as the reference product. So right now we're looking at those two kinds of data and judging that these biosimilars work just as well as the reference product.
Yeah, can I ask a question, Angus, because I'm kind of curious about this. You know, as a first designated interchangeable that gets in the market, do you think this is going to be a tipping point where, because biosimilar uptake has been a little bit slower than anticipated, that more physicians will be more likely to prescribe biosimilars? Or do you think that they're going to start saying, well, biosimilars are somewhat inferior to interchangeables and just ignore them because they don't have the switching studies, they don't have the presentation studies and the FDA's blessing?
Great question, Hakun. I think that depends on a lot of variables. One is how good the data is for that interchangeable. We want to see the data from clinical trials right in the FDA package insert. We want to know about them. Are all doctors, and when they're talking to their patients, should learn about the drug and how well it works? I think if that happens, and then on the payer side, people who are paying for the drugs, insurance companies, pharmacy benefits managers, the government, if they also see the value of the interchangeable drug, I think that we'll get good market uptake. You were referencing how the biosimilars market hasn't taken on as quickly as hoped. I think we're all interested in, from providers and patients' perspective, getting the prices down, and that's all we're talking about today with biosimilars, is trying to reduce the prices. And really, that's probably going to hinge on market uptake and getting more biosimilars into the market.
Yeah, and I would totally agree, Dr. Worthing. You know, coming from a manufacturer perspective, I think it's very important that all the stakeholders understand that a biosimilar that's quote unquote just a biosimilar is not less safe or less quality. It's quite the opposite, actually. I think the bar for biosimilarity is high, to Dr. Worthing's point around the analytics in particular. But I think it's going to be beholden for all stakeholders to understand that, in fact, a product with just a biosimilarity designation isn't less anything. It's different. If you pursue interchangeability, the purpose of that is different. And therefore, I think to Dr. Worthing's point, manufacturers will look at product by product and make that decision, which is a very significant investment. As Dr. Worthing mentioned, it's a large-scale clinical trial. And because of the number of switches, it requires a lot of time. And therefore, it's not an overnight proposition. So, you know, I think that I think we'll see some molecules in some markets that interchangeability is very important. And I think we'll see other areas where it's less important, either because of how the product is given to the patient or the disease area. If it's an acute use in oncology, I think you'll see things look very different from an interchangeability standpoint versus a chronic use agent where a patient might be on it for years or decades.
When we're talking about the confidence in the biosimilar pathway and achieving biosimilarity, a lot of my colleagues and experts in the biosimilars field that I talk to will discuss a biosimilar as being akin to a new batch or a new lot of a reference biologic drug. And the way we talk about that is we know that since 1998, when the first biologic in rheumatology was approved, that drug is different from the drug that's coming under the same brand name now. It has shifted because of change in manufacturing techniques, often improvements. And we now know with analytical detail and technology that's available these days that a biosimilar might be more like a current reference biologic than that reference biologic is similar to when it started, when it was first FDA approved. And so thinking of it in that light, you can consider a drug that has achieved biosimilarity status, according to the FDA, as a new batch or a new lot of the reference product.
Right. And I was just thinking that since you're a specialist, that might be something that you would look one step further to figure that out. But for the average healthcare provider, and would they be looking at this from the perspective of all the history with small molecules, where you have a generic drug which has an exact ingredient that's identical, and that they say, yes, a pharmacist can actually make that substitution, and the interchangeable is really kind of the biologic version of that, whereas the biosimilar is just another product. So, you know, in some ways, if you're looking at it from somebody who's not digging deeper, doesn't it somehow make it sound like the interchangeable has been blessed by the FDA as being safer or, you know, substitutable for this product?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly part of what some people are thinking. I think the FDA has made it very clear in their thinking that that is not true, that it's less safe, because, of course, the hurdle for biosimilarity is where you determine whether the product has enough of the analytical similarity to be considered similar. But I definitely agree that there will be that perception. And I think that, in part, that's why in Europe they don't have the designation of interchangeability. And the reason for that is because they believe in the science of biosimilarity and leave it up to the individual countries to decide. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20, right? We're only 7 years in the U.S., but I think, thinking that there could be a perception that an interchangeable is a higher quality or higher level of safety or efficacy is incorrect. And I think the FDA will continue to try and reiterate that. The reason why they're two different designations is they're proving two different things. So I think that it's a worthwhile point because I think stakeholders will, as they learn more about it, could naturally go to that. And the truth is it's a different pathway and it's a different approach from small molecules for many reasons, the least of which is the complexity of the molecules.
Molly brings up Europe, and I think that's an astute observation. The difference between the biosimilar pathway and the interchangeable pathway is probably in the eye of the beholder at this point. For me, a biosimilar designation means that a drug is expected to work as well and have the same safety issues as a reference product. Like I said, a new batch of the old reference product. On the other hand, I think interchangeability is an excellent idea in the multi-payer, multi-state market like the United States compared to Europe, because patients that I prescribe drugs for can be expected to move, change insurances, graduate into Medicare, or their formulary or their same old insurance might change year to year. And so they may actually expect to switch back and forth from a reference product to a biosimilar. And so I'm thrilled that the FDA proposes to study drugs like that.
Thanks for joining us for our inaugural episode of Not So Different. Join us next time as we tackle the issue of reimbursement for biosimilar therapies. Until then, visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.